13 minus 13. They cruised easily through the blackness. The piecemeal squadron Kip Doran had titled the Dozen and Two Avengers, a name the Jedi expected would be often repeated throughout the galaxy before much longer. All of them had flown Lando's Folly several times in the modified TIE fighters, and all had done well, with several climbing onto the notable board. Even more important, through the extensive training the disciplined Kip had forced upon them, they had learned to fly together, complementing each other's movements, anticipating rather than reacting. They wouldn't match up to the more notable starfighter squadrons, Kip knew, like Rogue Squadron, not yet, but they were improving daily, and they were seeing more action than any of the others. Perhaps one day soon, the Dozen and Two would be spoken of in the same breathless manner as Rogue Squadron. That was Kip's hope. Of course, if the three Solos, or any of them, particularly Jaina, decided to join, the equation would change dramatically. The offspring of Han and Leia would bring immediate recognition and attention to the Dozen and Two, a name, Kip realized, he would have to alter. Would that be a good thing? Were the 14 members of his squadron ready for the attention, ready for the spotlight? Such notoriety would aid them, no doubt, when battles were joined, for their enemies would likely be too afraid to properly coordinate their movements and attack, but also, with the glory, would come greater enemies. Were they ready? Was Kip ready? And what of the Avengers' leadership? Kip had to wonder. Jaina had surpassed him running the belt, and despite his bravado, Kip understood just how soundly he had been beaten. He could fly the belt 100 more times and never come near Jaina's mark. The other pilots of the Dozen and Two knew that, too. So if Jaina and her brothers joined the group, who would lead? As it stood now, Kip's only real rival was Miko, the only other Jedi and easily the second-best pilot of the bunch. And Miko, a quiet and unassuming type who spent most of his time practicing with his lightsaber or just sitting alone under the starry canopy, held no apparent aspirations of leadership. He was, in fact, serving time as Kip's apprentice, training under the more experienced Jedi. All of those thoughts accompanied Kip into the darkness of space as he and his fellows departed Dubrillion. He wasn't unsettled by the possibilities, though, but rather contemplative, and in the end he simply decided that the gain would outweigh any of the potential troubles. If the three Solos joined the Avengers, the Dozen and Five, he supposed, the squadron would soon be thought of in elite terms, and their missions would become more important, more dangerous, and more profitable in terms of the gain to the cause of law and the New Republic. The Dozen and Five, a dozen regulars and five Jedi, could well become the greatest squadron in the galaxy. Of course, Kip didn't really believe that the Solos would join in, not all of them at least. Luke Skywalker had been typically diplomatic and respectful when he had met with Kip on Dubrillion, but he had also been somewhat stern and disapproving. Kip wasn't sure if Luke thought this smuggler hunting a duty that was beneath Jedi Knights, or if he simply objected to it on personal grounds. Hadn't Han Solo been among the most notorious of smugglers at one time? But in either case, Kip had come away from the meeting with the definite feeling that Luke was not in favor of his present activities. Yet neither had Luke demanded that those activities cease, and so Kip led his squadron now to the Viragi sector, to a remote area bereft of star systems, an empty black space region except for an observation buoy Kip and his friends had put in place at a hyperspace junction. Following the signal on a secret and little-used channel, Kip guided the squadron to the buoy. Miko Reglia put the others in a defensive ring around Kip's XJ X-Wing as Kip docked with the buoy. His astromech droid, R5L4, Kip called him L4, quickly began downloading the information, passing it on to Kip's view screen, fast-forwarding through days and days of emptiness. Kip sighed and relaxed back in his seat. Smugglers weren't easy to find anywhere in the galaxy, and were particularly rare out here in this region of the Outer Rim. Except, of course, for those who went to Lando's planets for a little business and a little training. and Kip couldn't go after any group that was anywhere near Lando Calrissian's operations, he knew. For the pragmatic profiteer would quickly exert his influence with people like Han and Luke to shut Kip down. The only movement showing on the viewscreen in front of him was that of the stars for a long, long while, and Kip settled back for an uneventful hour. He perked up briefly as R5L4 slowed the sequence to normal, recording the appearance of one suspicious freighter as it hypered into the region, but then sighed again as he watched that ship re-vector and hyper away, with R5L4's computations showing that it was heading for Destrillion. And so it went, hour after hour, with the records of the buoy showing nothing remarkable, other than a couple of asteroids in areas previously unknown, and a few freighters and even a couple of smaller personal ships, but so far out and moving too fast to even warrant an inspection. But then, nearing the end of the records, a ship did show up where one didn't seem to belong, an outdated shuttle, Spacecaster class, according to R5L4. "Backtrack its course, L4," Kip instructed. Its angle of approach into the buoy's field of scan seemed out of place. Certainly nothing coming from the inner core. The word Belkaden flashed on the screen, along with its coordinates in the nearby Dalanbian sector. "Vitals?" Kip asked. And even as the word left his mouth, the history and present disposition of Belkaden scrolled before him, including the details of X-Gal 4. Why would they be leaving? A question mark appeared on the screen, R5L4 apparently not understanding the rhetorical nature of the question. On Kip's instruction, R5L4 focused on the buoy records that followed the path of the departing spacecaster, calculating its jump all the way to the borders of the Helska system, where it disappeared from scanners. Then the droid went to the audio recordings, pieces of subspace chatter, mostly from Lando's operation. On Kip's orders, the droid calculated the approximate departure time from Belkaden for the spacecaster, then focused its inspection on that period and on those signals coming from the general direction of Belkaden. Only one of the few clear words decipherable from the less-than-perfect detection jumped out at Kip. Storm. Was Belkaden and this station called X-Gal 4 in trouble? Kip felt the adrenaline beginning to course through his veins, that tingle of excitement that always so charged him before adventure. He had a choice to make, for Belkaden was a long way from the Helska system, but as soon as he gave it any real thought, the answer seemed obvious. Whatever might have happened on Belkaden, some of the scientists had apparently escaped, though why they would make their way to the remote Helska system, and not back toward the core, or even toward Lando's operations, or toward the not-so-distant Model sector, escaped him. "Give me all the details of the Helska system," Kip instructed his droid, and the scrolling began immediately and didn't last long. There were no listed settlements in Helska and no apparently inhabitable planets. "Why?" Kip asked quietly. "Because you requested it," scrolled the oblivious droid's answer. Kip frowned and slid the screen away. "We're going to the Helska system," he called out to Miko and the others. "Plot it out." And while they went to work, Kip fashioned a report concerning Belkaden, a general call for someone to find out if the station there needed help. Luke didn't even begin to slow as he plunged into the asteroid belt. Didn't even hear the warning from Belt Runner 1 that their shield generator was still acting up and they might not be able to offer him any protection. He rolled the TIE fighter about one asteroid, then dived down through a pair of rocks that appeared suddenly around the backside of the first. No instruments for Luke. He didn't even have R2-D2 strapped in behind him, as was customary on the X-Wing. He was flying by instinct and the Force, feeling the flow of asteroids and searching for the emanations of Han and Chewie. He dodged another boulder, dived down under and around another, then shot up before a wall of the spinning rocks, leveling off and cutting deeper into the flow as soon as he noted a break in the array. He had come into the belt near where Han and Chewie had gone off the screens, but he couldn't recognize the asteroids he had been watching on the view screens. Still, he knew that he was in the right vicinity. "We've got the shields up and running," came the call from Belt Runner 1. "Does that include the shields on the TIE bomber?" Luke asked, hoping for some confirmation that his friends were alive. "If it's out there and not too badly damaged, it should have shields," came the less-than-confident voice on the other end. Luke continued to dodge and swerve, and was somewhat encouraged at first to find no debris. But then a solar wing panel smashed into a pulp whipped by. Luke took a deep, steadying breath. Leia was on the speaker now, pleading with him for some information. How could he begin to tell her? He recognized then that his own grief would be no less than hers. His relationship with Han had started on rocky footing and had continued somewhat stormily for a long, long time. But despite the occasional arguments and philosophical disagreements, there was indeed a deep, deep bond between the two, as true a love as brothers might know. How could Han be gone now? Leia continued to plead. Luke shut off the communicator, deciding it would be better to tell her face to face. He brought his TIE fighter into a barrel roll and flipped it head over heels halfway through so that he came out in the flow of the belt instead of against it. And then he saw them, perched on the back of an asteroid like a sand fly on the side of a moisture evaporator back on Tatooine. Somehow, Han and Chewie had put the TIE bomber down on the large rock, and that feat seemed all the more impossible when Luke considered the damage the craft had sustained with one wing torn away. Luke came in slow, adjusting his thrusters so that he was barely inching in on the rock as he followed it along its course. Slowly, hindered as much by fear for his friends as by respect for the dangerous asteroid, Luke crawled up, up, past the TIE bomber to a point where he could get a look into its cockpit. There sat Chewie and Han, arguing as usual, Han pointing one way, Chewie another, and both shaking their heads at the same time. Han had some blood on his forehead. Chewie noticed Luke in the TIE fighter then and gave a great Wookiee roar. Luke could tell because of the way Han grabbed at his ears. "They're all right," Luke called, clicking on the communicator. "Where are they?" Leia cried. "Why can't we see them?" Lando asked at the same time. "Are they out of the belt?" Mara asked. Luke started to answer Leia, then Lando, then Mara, then Leia again, and then just laughed at the futility of it all. It struck him then that Han and Chewie always seemed to be doing inexplicable things, that this was just another in a long series of amazing dodges against the claws of the grim specter of death. "Han, can you hear me?" Luke called, rolling through the channels. In response, to show that he could indeed hear but couldn't respond, Han held up his microphone, dangling at the end of a torn cord. Luke nodded back, then inched his way around the downed craft, inspecting the damage. It wouldn't fly again, he knew, or at least not with any stability, and how Han and Chewie had ever put it down safely on the asteroid, Luke could only guess. Also, given that the ship's drives showed no signs of life, Luke doubted that the bomber had any kind of deflector shield working. How, then, was he going to get Han and Chewie out of there? "Lando," he called, "are you guys reading my signals?" "Got you loud and clear," Lando replied. "Hanging out behind that big asteroid. Is that where Han and Chewie are?" "Hanging right on the back," Luke replied. "Any idea of how we can get them out of there?" "Help's already on the way," Lando assured them. "We'll use a tow ship and suck them right out of there." Luke, who was back in position above the downed TIE bomber's cockpit, saw Chewie howl again and saw Han's grimace and knew that they, too, had heard. That brought another smile to his face. The thought of Han's disgrace at having Lando's machines come and pluck him out of danger. He'd never live this one down. Luke stayed with the downed craft until Lando's tow ship arrived, bouncing through the asteroids. They did an impromptu check using a grabber arm to ensure that the shields were working well, then brought the shields down long enough to hook on a tow cable. "It'll be bumpy on the way out," the pilot of the tow ship warned. Luke stuck around just long enough to see Han's wry smile, then he turned his TIE fighter about and headed away, looking for an exit from the belt. "We'll ignore the time spent babysitting Han and Chewie," came Lando's voice. "Just 11 more minutes riding upstream, and you've got the new record." Luke smiled, but he didn't even seriously consider the remark. He wasn't the least bit interested. He found his exit point and zipped away, cutting a smooth line through the belt and clear into the open space, heading back to Debrillion, arriving on the planet long before the towing operation had even begun back at the belt. He found Lando and the others still in the central control room, with Lando wearing a headset and bending over one panel, talking excitedly into a microphone. "Always the hero," Mara said with a smile, and she wrapped Luke in a hug. Leia moved beside her and took her brother's hand. "Give the credit to Han and Chewie," Luke explained. "I still don't know how they got that broken piece of space junk onto the back of that asteroid."
"They always find a way," Leia said.
"The modified tractor transmitter," Lando explained, putting down the headset and moving to join the group. "The ion generators were still working on Belt Runner 1, but they couldn't get the power boost signal out to the other ships. You went in there naked, my friend." Luke nodded and didn't seem either upset or concerned. "Off-ship shielding is still a good concept," Lando pressed. "Planetary defenses will be all the stronger with fighters that can take battlecruiser-class hits."
"A limited and limiting concept," Luke replied calmly. "The backup systems needed to make sure all the shields don't blink out would be daunting. And if they did blink out, you'd have a bunch of ships running around in real trouble."
"They'd still have the shields from their own systems," Lando argued.
"But the safety net would be gone," Luke explained, concerned more with the psyche of the pilots. "They wouldn't appreciate how to fly it. It's the ability to operate on the very edge of disaster that makes a good pilot."
Lando shook his head and started to reply, but realized that, in light of Luke's rush into the belt shieldless, any rebuttal would prove difficult. Before he could even begin his argument, a shaken Han and Chewbacca walked into the room, Han with a towel wrapped around his cut forehead. "That tin can you sent to get us hit every asteroid in sight on the way out," Han complained, but the others, too relieved to see the pair alive, merely smiled. Chewie, though, wasn't finished with the complaining, and with a Wookiee, complaints usually took the form of action. He headed straight for Lando, arms outstretched as if he meant to choke the life out of the man. Luke and Mara, Leia and the three kids, all stepped in between, but all started sliding back as Chewie continued his stalk. Finally, though, with Lando retreating to match the Wookiee's progress, Chewie backed off. "Did we beat Moss and Twinko?" Han asked, breaking the tension. Lando looked to his technicians.
"We lost them at 4:41, one replied ironically, the exact mark set by Moss and Twinko.
Lando started to declare a tie, but took a glance at the still-fuming Wookiee and abruptly decided, "Add 5 seconds for the time it took to hop on the back of the asteroid. 4:46, a new record."
"Who cares about the record?" Leia asked. "The flying alone to get you onto that asteroid was nothing short of remarkable, according to Luke."
"Best flying those two have ever done," Luke agreed.
The others added their platitudes, with words like brilliant and amazing thrown about. Han was going to explain that Chewie deserved the credit, that the blow to his head had knocked him senseless for those few critical seconds, but the Wookiee interjected a long wail, a confirmation of their teamwork effort. They were a unit, comrades, the closest and most trusted of friends, and by definition of that bond, the credit for either one's exploits would be deservedly shared by the other. Han took it all in with a wink to his Wookiee counterpart. "No problem," he assured them, his face twisting into a wry smile. He did frown a bit when his gaze drifted to Lando, though, reflecting his honest feelings. Fear and even a sickness deep in the pit of his stomach. "No problem indeed." They came out of hyperspace and into the Helska system in a rolling, living formation, the dozen and two Avengers alternating their respective places in the wedge with coordinated barrel rolls and tight loops, brilliant precision flying that kept them on the edge of disaster, and also made their signal on any watching scanners much harder to decipher. Kip Duron kept the lead at all times, though, with Miko Reglia on his right wing. The system wasn't large, with only 7 planets and none of them too widely spaced. R5L4 kept the data streaming across Kip's view screen, detailing all the knowledge about the planets and the system, as the squadron cruised past the 7th planet and then the 6th. The 5th was a gas giant, an uninhabitable ball of roiling fury, so Kip rolled past it with hardly a thought, focusing on the 4th planet, an intriguing ball of ice. "I'm getting some readings from the 4th," Miko called in a moment later. Following Kip's lead, the squadron slowed. What had they stumbled upon, he wondered? A smuggler's den? Another scientific outpost? And if so, then why wasn't it on the charts, as required by New Republic law? It made no sense to him, and yet he knew that the Spacecaster-class shuttle hadn't exited the system. If it had, the buoy would surely have detected it. "Shields up and torpedoes ready," Kip called on the open frequency to all the others. "Offset the wedge. 2 to my right." The speedy A-wing on Kip's left did a snap roll that put it right in line behind the trailing ship on the right-hand line of the wedge. "Off-planet movement," came Miko's call, and Kip's astromech confirmed it even as his wingman cried out. Indeed, he soon confirmed visually there was movement. Dozens and dozens of... of what? Asteroids? Kip's instruments revealed little at first, bringing in a jumble of signals that seemed to indicate some sort of life energy. "Hold back and cover my tail," he instructed the others, and he swooped away. His next impression was that these were indeed asteroids, albeit spectacular ones, showing many different colors. But as he drew even nearer, a chill ran up Kip's spine. R5L4 issued a stream of protests, flashed signals on Kip's screen that showed that there were some life forms ahead, and then another, even more urgent signal brought Kip's attention to his instruments. A tremendous energy bubble surrounded the frozen 4th planet. Kip looked back to the multicolored asteroids, noted the specific geometric shapes. Not one of the things looked exactly like another, but they all shared some features, the tapered nose, the aerodynamic sides. These were craft, starfighters. Kip throttled up to full and yanked back, turning his nose up in a sharp loop. As he hit the top, he rolled about to upright and leveled off, shooting back the way he had come. And on came the pursuit. A swarm was the only way Kip could describe it. "They're enemies," he cried, and even as the words left his mouth, R5L4 screeched and his X-wing lurched, slammed by something. Kip went through a series of evasive maneuvers, spinning down and out to the right, snap rolling back to the left, and with full throttle the whole time. He took some comfort as he neared the rest of his squadron, screaming ahead in tight formation, laser cannons firing, torpedoes flashing away. "Meet me left, Miko," he cried, and he hooked turn to his right and continued the turn until he was facing back the other way, with Miko obediently on his wing. Miko was firing, and so too was Kip as he came out of the turn, blindly, desperately. He scored a solid hit on the nearest enemy, and that rock-like starfighter spun away, but the second zoomed past him, and in that close encounter he saw that these were piloted ships. There was a canopy, resembling mica more than transparasteel, and behind it he saw the pilot, a barbaric-looking humanoid, its face a lump of pulsating flesh. He shook off the disturbing sight and led Miko back to the right, back toward the rest of the squadron. And they were into it thick, with enemy fighters swooping all about them, firing projectiles out of forward and side cannons that looked more like strange miniature volcanoes. To their credit, the dozen and two were handing out most of the hits, many taking chunks off enemy vessels. But those vessels usually went into a spin and then came back out of it, leveling and heading fast to rejoin the battle. "They can take a beating," Miko remarked. "But they can't hand one out," Kip noted, seeing several projectiles slam against the B-wing's shields, only to be repelled. "All right, dozen and two," he called. "Our shields will beat them. Let's get organized and knock them off one at a time." He turned back to his droid. "L4, try to call them, all channels. Let's see if they'll surrender." Even as he finished, a cry came back from the B-wing. "My shields are down!"
Before Kip could even respond, a host of enemy fighters soared into position and let fly swarms of volcano missiles, and that B-wing was halved again and again in rapid sequence until a thousand little pieces littered the dark sky. And then another cry of lost shields, and the headhunter swiftly suffered the same fate. Still, the remaining Avengers held their formations and hammered at the enemy fighters. Several were blasted into little pieces with concentrated laser fire, drilling chunk after chunk in the same spot until the whole of the ship cracked apart. But for every one lost, another dozen replaced it, and more were swarming up from the planet. "No shield!" Miko cried. Kip looked at his wingman, perplexed. How was that possible? Miko hadn't even been hit, for he and Kip weren't in the thick of it yet. "Gravity well. I felt a tug, like a dozen G's pulling me out of my seat," Miko tried to quickly explain. "And then a hole in the shield, and then nothing. My droid's babbling about magnetic fields, but I don't know." "Get out! Get out!" Kip cried, to Miko and to all the others. And he pointed his own nose toward the main battle, thinking to cover the retreat. He came in spinning and firing, hitting one with a laser blast, and then neatly tucking a torpedo into the cavity the laser had caused, blowing the enemy fighter to bits. He swerved between two more, taking a couple of inconsequential hits, then reversed throttle, with R5L4 howling all the while, and flipped his X-wing about, a vicious maneuver that nearly stole his consciousness, despite the fact that his inertial compensator was running at 97%. Kip kept his cool and came out firing, and had both the enemy fighters he had just passed spinning away with pieces of them flying. An A-wing flew past him, the pilot frantic, taking hits, with some of them thudding against the side and latching on like molten goo. "Oh, no," Kip moaned, seeing those missiles melting right through the hull, one going right into the ion drive connectors. The A-wing blew apart. Kip spun about to meet the pursuing swarm, got a few shots off and took a few hits, but got past them. He went in close enough to the bow of one enemy ship to spot another facet of it, or perhaps an added piece, for this looked more like a breathing, pulsing creature, a disembodied heart, and the readings coming from it were very different from anything Kip had ever seen. He felt a sudden tug and knew that his shields had dropped, and knew that this ship or creature, or whatever it was, had just ripped them away with some type of magnetic or supergravity field. He focused his wrath on that notion, on this thing that had brought death so quickly to several of his friends. Torpedoes away. But they didn't get near the thing, seemed to stop in mid-flight as if they were pressing their noses against an impenetrable barrier, and then just crushed in on themselves and blew apart. "What?" Kip cried, not daring to slow and inspect things further, for he was naked now, without shields, and with a host of enemy ships in pursuit. "I'm hit," Miko cried. Kip turned and turned, dived and spun, trying to find his friend, firing his laser cannons all the while, though he couldn't even slow enough to locate a target. "My drives are down," came Miko's voice. "No power, no power." Then silence. Kip saw another of his squadron, an older X-wing, disintegrate under a barrage of missiles, and he pointed his nose out of the system and took off at full throttle. He felt the pursuit at his back and worked hard to fix the coordinates so that he could make the jump to light speed. No time for heroics now. Survival was the key. Survival to return and report. An X-wing appeared on his wing, the speedy craft pacing him. "They're right behind," the pilot cried. "Keep it straight and fast," Kip called back, for these strange craft had not shown any ability to outrun them. "But we're the only ones left," the pilot cried. "Steady and straight." And indeed, the enemy fighters couldn't catch them, but that surely did not end the pursuit, for another craft, a roughly oval-shaped rocky vessel, burst open a forward chamber, and a host of half-meter-long, black-winged creatures that somewhat resembled armored turf-hoppers poured forth. Kip saw them and saw that they closed easily. "Hyperdrive!" he cried to his new wingman. "No coordinates!" "Now!" Kip ordered, and he engaged, and so did the A-wing. But the A-wing had a trio of vicious insectoids already on it, secreting a substance that melted through the hull, allowing the creatures to burrow in. Kip lost sight of the A-wing as the starlight elongated in that momentary freeze of reality that was initial hyperspace, but he understood, somewhere in his subconscious, that the other had not survived the jump. that the engagement of the powerful hyperdrive had blown the damaged A-wing to pieces. Kip came out of lightspeed almost immediately, fearing he would collide with a planet or zip through a sun. Before he could begin to try and calculate where he was, though, he saw that he too had not escaped unscathed, that he too carried a couple of unwanted passengers. And one was coming through the canopy right at him, wicked pincers chopping excitedly.
"Cern Padal?" Han echoed incredulously. "You want me to go to Cern Padal?"
"A favor," Lando innocently replied. "Hey, I let you run the belt for free." He stopped as Han frowned, reminding him that bringing up the belt incident might not be a wise thing to do when begging a favor.
"It'll take you 2 days," Lando said. "If I have to divert a freighter, I'll be spending more than the payload will bring in."
"Then don't sell them the ore," Han reasoned.
"Got to," Lando explained. "As long as I keep the outer colonies supplied, the New Republic looks the other way on some of my, how shall I put this, under-the-table operations."
"Cost of doing business," Han said with finality, holding up his arms. He looked past Lando then to Leia, who was standing in the hallway, arms crossed over her chest and frowning, a pose that poignantly reminded him that Lando could prove to be a very valuable ally at this time. Lando had the network out here, the contacts they'd need if they wanted to truly understand how the Advisory Council might be connected to the smugglers. Like it or not, Lando Calrissian was a lever that both Luke and Leia desired in the turbulent political arena.
"Hey, even though your run didn't go well, and I'll give you another try for free, Jaina got the record, and so did you and Chewie," Lando pleaded.
Han smirked, more at his wife than at Lando.
"Cern Padal?" he repeated, as if the very notion was preposterous, but in a conciliatory tone.
Lando's smile nearly took in his ears, and he started walking again toward the control room.
"You'll be back before anyone realizes you're gone," he said.
One of the technicians came out of the control room then, carrying a data pad. He spotted Lando and ran to the man, his look somewhat nervous.
"Trouble?" Lando asked, taking the printout.
"From Kip Duran," the technician explained.
Lando looked at the heading and chuckled.
"The Dozen and Two Avengers," he recited with a snort and a shake of his head, for even Lando, known to be boastful and flashy, recognized that Kip was going a little over the line of pretense here.
"What's the problem?" Leia asked, as she and Han moved beside their friend.
"Outpost on Belkaden, in the Dalandian sector," Lando explained. "Something going on over there."
He looked to the technician. "Did you try to raise them?"
"Nothing coming from that planet but static," the man confirmed.
"Belkaden?" Leia asked.
"Small planet with a scientific outpost," Lando replied. "Just a dozen or so scientists on planet."
"And what does this mean?" she asked, taking the printout.
"Probably means their transmitter is out," Lando replied. "Or maybe there's a solar flare wrecking communications. Probably nothing important."
He looked to Han with a wry smile.
"Since you're going out anyway," he began.
"Belkaden?" Han echoed, more incredulously than he had echoed Cern Padal.
"Just a few days out of the way," Lando said innocently.
"I haven't even agreed to go to Cern Padal yet," Han reminded him.
"Luke and Mara will go to Belkaden," Leia offered.
"They've been wanting some time alone anyway."
Lando nodded, more than satisfied with the offer. His ships were all dedicated to business, and any diversions meant money lost. They all met later on that day, and indeed, Luke and Mara were more than happy to take the excursion to Belkaden, while Han and Chewie would take the Millennium Falcon to Cern Padal with the payload for Lando. Leia begged off going, but suggested strongly that Han take Anakin along for the flight, and even suggested that Han might want to let Anakin take the helm again. He just looked at her helplessly, his expression one of surrender. She was the ultimate mediator, and he had known all along, of course, that she would find a way to sort out the problems between father and son concerning Anakin's wild piloting near Coruscant. The next morning, Han and Chewie went to the Falcon's dock to find the hold thrown wide, with cart after cart being floated inside.
"And how much of this stuff is illegal?" Han asked Lando, who was supervising the loading.
"All above the table," Lando assured him with a less-than-confirming wink.
Chewie howled.
"Luke's going to want your help out here," Han said. "He's got some issues with Kip Duron and his friends, and is going to need some information on some smuggling operations."
Lando dipped a low bow.
"At your service," he said through a glittering smile.
Han knew what that meant, and he wasn't exactly sure it was a good thing. They saw Luke across the way then, offering a wave and moving with Mara into the Jade Saber, R2-D2 rolling along behind them. A few minutes later, cleared by the tower, the green huge ship blasted away, disappearing from sight in a matter of seconds.
"Quick ship," Lando remarked.
"You think Luke would give Mara anything less?" Han asked.
Lando looked up at the empty sky where the Jade Saber had just departed and nodded. The Millennium Falcon took off an hour later for a one-day trip that would prove to be the most harrowing journey of Han Solo's life.